Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the gene pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in here on this final Monday before Christmas. And if you're shipping things out, better get them shipped out fast. I had to make a run to the UPS store today to make a little send out to the mail, the post office, get some things out. Hope you are getting all your Christmas shopping taken care of. Hope you've purchased Joe Fortunato a suitable gift. And hope you're ready to talk a little Jags football here tonight. Jaguars Monday with General Manager Gene Smith. A little bit of an odd we've had times where we've missed a week because of a Monday night game, but we had a Thursday night game, so we're sort of in midweek all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's great to be here on a Monday when it's not so packed with things to do, because typically a normal NFL Monday is the busiest day of the week for, you know, a coach, for a scout. So it's a little bit more relaxed, I guess, tonight coming in here.
You're doing a lot of assessment and a lot of looking not only at yourself, but starting to get ready for the next opponent. We'll do some of that as well. We'll look back on the Jaguars' loss in Atlanta, as well as looking ahead to the game against the Titans as well. And we'll spend some time talking about what happened in that game and where we are in the season to this point. But I think it's very clear that the number one most interesting story going around right now, the folks that have the most interest in, is about the ownership change. And I think after having things approved in Dallas on Wednesday, and then having Shad Khan here on Friday for a press conference, and he had a chance to meet with staff, and he had a chance to meet with players on Saturday, you've had a chance to chat with them. This is on everybody's mind. I was down last night. I live in the Avondale area. We had the Luminaria and all the celebrations. I mean, I couldn't go 5 feet without somebody stopping me and wanting to talk about what the new owner was going to mean and what the direction was going to be and the new coach and so forth. So I want to start out getting from you where, you know, what your feelings are on what's happened so far with the new owner coming in, and what kind of direction are we looking at?
Well, it was a very good meeting for me because my first opportunity was in Dallas on last Wednesday, and then certainly had quality time with him on Friday and Saturday in particular. So when I say quality time, it was a very meaningful time with someone that comes across very genuine, someone that I do feel is fully committed to Jacksonville, and certainly he has a strong passion for the NFL and the Jaguars.
Yeah, and I think some of the energy that he'll bring, renewed, he's called it a rebirth, something that he'll be looking forward to really energizing into the franchise going forward. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the direction. Of course, the coaching search is something that is on a lot of people's minds. We'll touch on that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that came out of the loss of the Falcons. First and foremost, and we can almost do this every week, but Maurice Jones-Drew, again, 17 carries, 112 yards. He leads the National Football League with 1,334 yards, and has a chance for the Jaguars' record. If he averages 119 yards per game in the last two, he would break Fred Taylor's single-season rushing record as a Jaguar.
Well, I think he would take great pride in that. I know our team would as well. He's shown tremendous durability for a guy who takes a pounding each week. I mean, a running back in the NFL, a feature back, takes a lot of shots, but he delivers a lot too. And when you look at him as a receiver, you look at him as a blocker, I mean, he is a complete back. He is a top competitor, and it's great to be talking about him a lot throughout a season, because he's been the brightest spot of this football team.
And here's a guy who was, you know, when the season began, we thought, well, geez, there's no backup. Will he be able to make it through? He's coming off an injury. Rashad Jennings is hurt. He doesn't have, you know, that true physical runner behind him. And he's closing in on 300 carries. He's, I think, got over 330 touches in total and doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
He doesn't. And, you know, the one thing about him is he's going to talk to you about Greg Jones. He's going to talk to you about his offensive line. He's going to talk to you about Mercedes Lewis and the people blocking in front of him. And there's times now when plays break down and you got to get yards on your own, and that's the one thing that I think really defines him. He's able to create and get yards on his own, and he is a guy that gets yards after first contact, and I think he sets the example for others to follow, certainly in our offense, in terms of how to finish a run, how to finish a block, how to finish, you know, a route. You know, he's a guy certainly that's a leader for us.
Also coming out of the Thursday night game, special teams making a big play with Kasim Osgood blocking the punt, and Zach Potter scooped it up, returned it for a touchdown. We've seen Kasim in coverage, and we've seen him, you know, as a gunner, but to come in and make that block at a time where, you know, the outcome of the game was no longer really in doubt, but there's a great effort play.
Great effort play, because when you watch it, he didn't come free. I mean, it was a nice scheme, but he still was confronted with a personal protector that he clearly just ran over and got his hand on the ball to create the block opportunity return for a touchdown. So, you know, we look at contested situations when players win, whether it's getting a sack or making a catch, and he won the contested situation when confronted with a blocker to get that punt block.
And then another example of guys playing all the way through, Gabbert to Chasten West for the touchdown toward the end in the final minute.
Well, that was good to see. I know up in Atlanta, you know, people had talked about, you know, they took some players out of the game. I can tell you what, try playing in that situation the whole game. Obviously, when you look at our football team, they're persevering through some tough things. We've had a lot of different players in the lineup, 16 new players that are on the current roster right now that weren't with us opening day. So, you know, that's certainly not counting guys who went to IR, but we've tried to acquire guys a lot of different ways, and for whatever reason this year, we've had more injuries than we've ever had in franchise history, and the guys do not look for excuses. They're not looking for a crutch. They keep trying to find ways to compete to win games, and I know it always hasn't shown up on the scoreboard the way they would like, but the effort clearly has been there down the stretch.
And you're talking about nearly a third of the roster wasn't here on opening day, and some of the moves you've had to make since then. Do you have a theory on the injuries? Do you feel like did the offseason impact that, or is it just one of those freak things?
Well, I think just in general around the league, most people, when I talked to them at the labor seminar last week, you know, the lockout certainly played into some of the injuries that we had early on. The amazing thing for us, a lot of ours came the second half of the season. We were relatively healthy the first half, and it's all different types of injuries. It's not one particular type. Sometimes you could say, well, you're having a rash of hamstring issues. Well, that's not the case. It's different types of injuries, and very unfortunate for some of these guys, because a lot of these guys were very durable coming into the league or in the time that they've been in the league, and a lot of it's just luck. I mean, you got to have good luck to stay healthy in some respects in the NFL.
Speaking of Gabbert, we're talking about the touchdown pass to Chasten West, 12 of 22, 141 yards, a touchdown and an interception. He was under pressure quite a bit. Obviously, you'd like better play out of the offensive line to give him some. John Abraham had a big day, who's given a lot of people trouble in the past, but the fact that he kept hanging in there, I mean, you certainly don't say that 53% completion is something you'd like, but certainly under the circumstances, could have been a heck of a lot worse.
It could have been. I think the one thing he's done throughout the year is he's stayed in there and he's competed well. You do see progress within the pocket. I know that's something that people have been critical of. I have full confidence in him. Again, I get a chance to see him in practice, not just in the games. And when things operate well around him, you know, I see things that he does extremely well and things that he can build on for the future. So as trying as this has been for him and for our offense, I can assure you in the future he's going to benefit from it.
I thought the key play in the game was the muff punt by Jarrett Dillard that led a play later to the Michael Turner touchdown. Just any chance to try to climb back in, it sort of was wiped out at that point.
Well, with the way we have struggled to score points, I would say certainly that was detrimental to the game at that point. You know, I take my hat off to Jared. He's back there trying to do his best. It's not something that he's done a lot of. It's unfortunate that you just can't get a fair catch You don't need a return, just a fair catch. And I saw it on a highlight yesterday, you know, where they're trying to field a ball before the half, and it costs points in the New England Denver game.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jarrett came back and he had a drop on the next ball thrown to him. And I know he had a trying time himself in a trying game. And I feel like he will rebound these last two games.
All right. So those are some of the thoughts coming out of the game on Thursday night. We'll talk a little bit about a couple of the other things that came up. But also we'll look forward. We'll also get a little more of Gene's thoughts on what his interaction was like with the soon-to-be Jaguars owner, Shad Khan. The New Year's Day Jaguars-Colts game, final home game of the year, is Fan Appreciation Day. It's also a time to show your appreciation to the Weavers by coming out to say goodbye. Fans will be encouraged to sign a 20-foot banner that will be displayed in the Pepsi Plaza from 10 a.m. till noon. That's what we're out there doing, the tailgate show. You can also create your own banner showing your appreciation and bringing them to the game. For tickets to the Jaguars, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. Back with an injury update and more from the general manager. Plus, you can put your guess in via Twitter for the Scout's Eye Unsung Player, as well as any questions or comments. Have some good questions coming in from folks here as we continue on. This is Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right here on Jaguars Radio.
Jaguars showing like they're bringing everybody against the punter. And they got it. Kasim Osgood got it. And it's picked up on the carom, and Zach Potter's going back the other way. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Jaguars. Kasim Osgood got it with one hand. And the Jaguars are on the board.
There's the big play by the special teams in Thursday's Jaguars loss in Atlanta. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Continue taking some good questions coming in. The tweeters, maybe it's the emotion ebbs a little bit after the game, and then you kind of get a chance to take a step back, and now folks are starting to look bigger picture. I like that. We'll get some of those questions here in just a moment. Time now for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. Mike Thomas, who did not play again with a concussion, was jogging around in practice on Saturday, I can tell you. We'll see if he gets back. We'll get a little better feel on the injury report tomorrow. Players were off today. Cecil Shorts with that hamstring, then Guy Whimper with the knee. Marco Coleman was wondering if it was John Abraham syndrome, but he's been dealing with a knee most of the year, and we'll see how Guy does. Of course, the Jaguars have had some injuries over there on that right side of the offensive line. That's the injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville Circle of Care. Continue getting your it picks in for the Scout's Eye Unsung Player. I want to get to some questions here, though, from some of the fans who are chiming in on Twitter today. This is from Chris. What's your take on pass blocking from this season? Any plans to fix it in the offseason, and how?
Well, it's a good question from Chris. Well, to be honest with you, when you look at the offensive line play, there's been times when it's been very good. There's been other times where it hasn't been so good. And I think the one thing that we have struggled with, I know against the Houston Texans, were some of their line stunts, you know, where they create different levels with your offensive line. So when you create different levels, you have to stay man, and you get caught in situations where you can't bump things off. So I think that's probably one thing that we could clearly get better at.
Is that about those guys learning to play as a group? I mean, you've had a couple of, obviously, Will Rackley as a rookie, and then having different guys at right tackle.
Well, I think that's part of it, because early in the year we were shuffling our offensive line due to some injuries. I think as the year goes on, you want to continue to see improvement in the group, because it's really five guys working as one if you're going to get good. And there's been times where it's been very good, but there were some protection breakdowns where we had some single situations, which are, you know, one-on-one matchups where they clearly won in the game. I mean, John Abraham came to play. When you look at him, you look at Freeney, you look at Jared Allen, those are three of the very best. And then you could throw in like a DeMarcus Ware type in the 3-4 scheme. The Giants always seem to have one or two guys that create rush off the edge. I know out in Denver they got two. They got Von Miller and they got Dumervil. I mean, there's some teams in the
Babin's
NFL.
Babin's having a big year.
Babin is having back-to-back years.
Yeah,
yeah, so when you're in those situations, you got to chip to slow them down. I mean, the one-on-one matchups like that, especially when you get behind, it's advantage to the defense.
Well, you know, and we're in a league now that is on pace for more passing yards than any year in the history of the National Football League, more passing attempts. The rules favor the offense. Pass rush seems to – certainly those numbers are going to go up. You're going to have more sacks when you have more passing opportunities. But I think that the importance of having multiple guys who can get to the quarterback is becoming more and more of a factor, isn't it?
No question. I think that was the difference in the Green Bay game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kansas City was able to create some rush. And in some one-on-one situations, you can't always do it with scheme. You got to get one man beating another man. And Tom Bahaly, I think, got the quarterback moving around quite a bit. I think the other thing with Green Bay, and a couple of chances I've had a chance to see him play, is they've dropped some balls this year, which is uncharacteristic. But you know what? They got one loss on their record. And so I feel like they can learn from this one and certainly get right back in stride, because they were playing, as good as any team in the NFL as they were winning games this year. They weren't winning them by accident.
I still like their chances going forward. Another question from Andy. What's the upcoming draft deepest in, position-wise, I guess he's talking about?
Well, Andy, again, we got another good question from someone tonight. It's really predicated on the underclassmen that declare. With the senior group, there'll be some interior defensive linemen in particular. There will certainly be a number of different positions that last year maybe weren't as good. Let's say linebacker could be one that could be very good this year. But again, it really depends on who declares. I mean, because there's some positions that you would say aren't as strong become strong as we get into late January and know who's going to be in the draft.
You probably have a pretty strong feeling on who is likely to declare, especially those maybe first, second round guys who've gotten a lot of attention and you've scouted and take a look at it. Ryan Khalil was from USC who declared the other day. There are a handful of quarterbacks who expect to hear something from fairly soon. More or less in terms of the impact that underclassmen are going to have on this draft and past drafts, or is it about the same?
It's about the same. The only thing I would say is, even though they publicly declared, I mean, I can't comment on them because they have not been cleared by the league. Mm-hmm. There has been cases where guys have declared and changed their mind.
Yeah.
There's a grace period of 72 hours where they can, you know, put their name in and still pull their name out and say they're going to stay as long as they haven't taken money or signed a contract with an agent. So we'll know in another month basically who's definitely in and who's out, and I'll have a lot better feel for the draft at that particular point.
Gray wants to know about the directions on the coaching search. What can you share with us, and where are things as far as that's concerned?
Well, it's something that we did discuss on Saturday. I feel like we got a good grasp on it, but there's a lot of things that are certainly still in play, and obviously I'm not going to compromise our team situation. Going to keep things very close to the vest and let the process work as it's supposed to by the league.
All right. We'll talk more with the Jaguars general manager as we continue. You can get some questions in on Twitter. You can tweet to me at Cole Pepper. Time now to name our Scout's Eye unsung player. Of course, that's Scout's Eye, the unsung player, the guy who doesn't necessarily have the big highlight play, but who deserves recognition for the way he played. I just, some weeks I feel very strongly about it. I told you a couple weeks ago that I thought Russell Allen was the biggest no-brainer for that of any, and that was who it was. I don't feel as strongly about my picks this week. We have a wide panorama of different Scout's Eye picks here on Twitter. So who do we have this week for the Scout's Eye unsung player?
Well, it's easier when you win,
mm-hmm.
I think, to pick out players. But if you have an opportunity to really study the film, there's still guys, even in losses, that certainly do very good jobs in their defined roles. And I'm going to go with Kasim Osgood. He did have the one highlight play, but that's not why I'm picking him. I'm picking mm-hmm. him because of his blocking and his coverage ability. He's a four-core special team player for us, and he really competed hard. He was like Maurice Jones-Drew playing special teams. And Montel Owens has certainly been the same way this year because the two of them went through some trying times early with some injuries. But I'd have to say against the Falcons, even if you took the punt block out of there, Kasim Osgood did some very good things in the game on special teams.
All right, so we do actually have a couple folks who picked Kasim. So people doing they were right along your train of thought as far as that's concerned. All right, when we come back, we'll jump into the gene pool and examine the tight end position, one that has evolved quite a bit over the years in the National Football League. Also, take more of your questions on Facebook and Twitter. Again, you can tweet to me at Cole Pepper. Fans, just text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sunny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You can hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. We're back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
Tight end in the wing, three receivers, 104 to play. Gabbard on third down, fires this pass. It's a touchdown to Chaston West.
Nice throw.
My goodness, does he have an arm.
He's got an arm. He can make every throw in the book, and that was an absolute bullet.
He was sharp on the drive.
There's the Jaguars' offensive touchdown from Thursday night. Blaine Gabbard to Chaston West. Jaguars falling in Atlanta. Next up, trip to Nashville to take on the Tennessee Titans. We'll talk about that game here in just a bit. But in the final game of the season, of course, at home against the now once no longer winless, now with one win, Indianapolis Colts. You can win a VIP game day experience to that game on New Year's Day from Gate. Get four game day tickets, four VIP Sky Patio Lounge passes, and a limo for four people to and from the game. Stop by your nearby Gate gas station to register. Jaguars fans, put Gate in your tailgate. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Cole Pepper here with you. Joe Fortunato at the controls.
And I like this question from Edward, too, only because he's using a baseball reference. Edward says, Gene, with the draft coming up, is it time to start swinging for the fences?
Well, obviously that is the goal, to try to put them over the fence. Your goal every time you draft is to get a great player. You know, a great player can win for you, and ultimately, if you at least get a good player, it takes good players who play great together to win championships. And it is a process where you have to take some calculated risk. And I understand that, weighing the risk versus the reward. And so that's the goal every time you draft in every round. And I think it's a valid question. And we can do a better job at what we're doing.
And we'll keep the questions going. By the way, all of our tweets and Facebook questions our compliments of our good friends at CopyFax.
And we'll get back to some of those in just a moment. But right now, let's jump into the gene pool as we examine the DNA of a position in the National Football League. Every week, we take a look at another position. This week, it is the tight end position. By my deep and exhaustive research, average size of a tight end, 6'3", 250, running a 4.85 in the 40. What do you have?
A little bigger than that. Coming out of the combine a year ago, 6.041, 253. And 4.78 in the NFL, an average starter was 6.041 a year ago, 2.51 and 4.74. So the NFL has a lot of what are called running catch tight ends in it. It's a little bit more of a dying breed by guys who can actually block at the point of attack versus the defensive end. We happen to have a guy that can block. It might be the best blocker in the NFL, Mercedes Lewis, but he's bigger. He's 6.062. And he's 261 pounds.
And how, you know, the variety of types of players. You could say, well, you got your little speed receivers and your big, tall possession receivers, and you've got your power backs and your scat backs. But there may be a wider range of styles of play among tight ends than anybody else on the offense, and maybe anywhere else. When you start looking at guys who are, you know, more H-back types, or guys who are, you know, the Dallas Clark, who's basically a glorified wide receiver. Tony Gonzalez, of course, one of the all-time greats. And I mean, there are so many different ways you can utilize a tight end. And the one thing that always strikes me about the tight ends, those guys usually are probably pretty good basketball players too, because they're tall, athletic, strong, physical, and, you know, usually make pretty good undersized power forwards at some level.
Cole, you're dead on. I mean, when you look at Gonzalez, you look at Gates in particular, mm-hmm. two players that are eventual Hall of Fame types. And then even Mercedes, his background, certainly a basketball background. He was a two-sport guy when he initially went to UCLA. You know, you have some crafty players that know how to use their bodies for the ball. And I think you get that out of learning how to rebound. When the ball comes off the rim, they know where it's going to be at, and they know how to use their body to shield the defender away. But, again, there are a lot of different types of tight ends, and a lot of it is what are you going to ask that guy to do? And like I said, from our perspective, we have run the ball a lot. Mercedes, in spite of the fact he doesn't have the numbers like he did a year ago in the passing game, he has had some dominant run-blocking games where he torques defensive ends, outside linebackers. He's one of the guys in the NFL that can still do it at that position.
All right, so is there a particular type of mindset you want out of a tight end? I mean, he's got to almost be, you know, half wide receiver brain, half offensive lineman brain, doesn't he?
He really does. And if you go back a number of years, we had a guy by the name of Pete Mitchell here. Mm-hmm. And if you passed him in the mall Christmas shopping, you would have no idea he ever played in the NFL. Pete was 6'2"-ish, 235, 4'8"-ish. Wasn't exceptionally big, wasn't exceptionally fast, but he was quick, and he was savvy, and he had exceptional hands, and he had the ability to catch the ball in traffic, which a tight end has to do a lot. So you want a guy that can make the crowd catch, that has that toughness to hang in there and catch the ball and secure the catch.
Pete might have had the best hands anybody ever played for this franchise. I mean, just terrific hands. All right, let's talk about the other non-measurables with a tight end. Do you want a particular mindset that is one way or the other, or is that going to depend on the style of offense you're drafting him into? Because not everybody is going to draft a catch-only tight or a primary catch tight. Not everybody's going to draft a primary block tight end. It depends on the kind of offense they're running.
No question. And the guy has to be someone the quarterback can trust. I mean, a guy that can convert his routes versus coverage, because the ball is going to be coming quick on the short to intermediate routes. Pete was very good at that on option routes. He mastered that. Now, Mercedes may not beat you with speed, but he could beat you with size. So, you know, if you're not going to win fast, you got to win big. He's a big person, obviously, with a great catching range. He's easy to find in the middle of the field for the quarterback. So, you know, he's a different type of guy than what we had in the early years with a Pete Mitchell. You know, the best guy, Cole, in the NFL right now for what it's evolved into in terms of the passing game for a tight end is Vernon Davis. I mean, here's a guy that's closer to your measurables, 6'3", and a quarter, 250, and he ran 4.4. So he's faster than most receivers. So when you talk about a vertical threat running down the seam of a defense, he certainly is a guy that's a prime example that can be a real vertical threat.
And it seems like every year at the combine, somebody has some tight end puts up big numbers. And sometimes it's a top pick like Davis. Other times, the kid comes from somewhere else. There was a guy last year, and the name now is just escaping me. It's on the tip of my tongue. Who had a huge, either last year or 2 years, had a huge combine from a tight end position, kind of an H-back style, and I think wound up going from non-pick to a sixth or seventh round pick, and I'll think of it here in a second. Doran something, I think.
Doran Dickerson.
Dickerson had the, who went. I mean, ran 4.4 something, 4.48, and vertical jump. Everybody goes, wow. Doesn't necessarily mean the fact that I can't remember his name means he's not doing a heck of a lot on the field necessarily. So it doesn't necessarily mean that's a translation. But again, just showing the athleticism of that position. All right, we wrap things up on the gene pool with who is best. Who is the best tight end you ever saw, scouted, of all time, what have you? Who do you think of when we talk about the best tight end?
Well, one I watched on TV, and one I got a chance to see live, too. And Kellen Winslow was the guy on TV. You know, he played in that San Diego offense with Dan Fouts, and he was a legitimate running catch tight end, 6'5", 250. You know his son's playing for Tampa Bay. But when you talk about 541 catches, 45 touchdowns, I'd have to say he was one of the real running catch tight ends. And then a guy a little smaller was Ozzie Newsome,
yep.
General manager for the Baltimore Ravens, 6'2", 232 with the Cleveland Browns. Here's a guy, 662 catches and 47 touchdowns. I mean, he had tremendous hands. When you talk about Pete Mitchell hands, Pete and Keenan McCardell might be the two best all-time here. But Ozzie might be a guy who had the best hands of any player that I saw. growing up playing for the Cleveland Browns. So we're going to see a running catch tight end this weekend, a guy who had 9 catches against the Colts, and Jared Cook for the Titans. So there's some guys that can legitimately run at that position that can create mismatches when you stay base defense against a guy who can run in the 4.4s, 4.5s this day and age.
All right, that's the tight end position in the gene pool as we dig in. Just a couple more weeks to go. We're examining each and every position group here on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Hey, become part of the Jaguars Advantage, new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of your favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. We'll take time out. More of your questions on Twitter and Facebook, you can tweet it to me at Cole Pepper. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jaguars matchup against the Titans on Saturday, a little Christmas Eve special. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
Jaguars back, the corners off a little bit. Ryan takes the snap, steps up into the pocket. Now Terrence is going to get hit, sacked, and the Jaguars get him on the ground. Terrence Knighton and Jeremy Mincy put him down.
One of the defensive plays from Thursday night's Jaguars loss to Atlanta. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith as we roll toward the top of the hour here. We'll talk about the matchup against the Titans. Also, a quick look around the AFC South shows that the Texans at 10-4 after losing to Carolina 28-13. Titans at 7-7. Boy, wasn't this a weekend of missed opportunities for teams in the playoff race? I mean, you can go up and down looking at teams that had a chance to accomplish something, whether it was clinch home field advantage like the Packers had. They lost that game. The Titans to close some ground on some of the other teams. They lose to Indianapolis. The Colts, I guess you could say they lost their chance at history with the win today or yesterday. But the Giants with a loss. You go up and down. There were some opportunities for teams to make some moves this weekend, and a lot of teams missed their chances.
They really did. I mean, any given Sunday in the NFL, that's why it's the number one brand, the NFL Shield.
All right, some folks here on Twitter chiming in. Here is Gary wants to know about free agent wideouts. I know you can't specifically talk about those guys because right now they're not free agents. They're free agents to be, and when they're still under contract, that's, the league rules prohibit that. But where are you in the process of preparations for the free agency period?
Well, we're going through the players now. Typically in the month of December, you start talking through the players because we do cross-checks. We utilize our college scouts as a secondary cross-check to our pro scout, who's the primary. And then it narrows down to Terry and certainly to myself. And so we're working through it. There are players that were hurt early. There are some players, too, that we clearly need to see late in the year. So we want to see the full body of work. But it's a process in play right now, Cole.
Do you have a pretty good feel for the type of players that are going to be out there, going to be available? Can you start putting together sort of at least a 30,000-foot view on who's going to be there, who might be targets, and what it might cost?
Well, we got a good idea on who may be available. Now, some of them certainly could be tagged with a franchise tag or be extended before they get to the market. There's also situations where we still got research to do on backgrounds, and then there's medical concerns on some. But in the end, it'll be a good group of players in pro free agency this year. There were a number of players at some positions that signed one-year deals based on the uniqueness to this past year.
CBA and so forth.
Right.
And,
yeah. So it'll be a good process to go through and then to see how the draft plays out, too. We don't know yet what the strength, for sure, at positions in the draft will be. Sometimes, with the drafts not as strong, pro free agency is. And so last year was clearly unique because pro free agency was after the draft, which it won't be that way this year.
Yeah, it won't be as compressed. You have sort of the two-phase of free agency, right? You have what essentially amounts to that first week and a half where most of the big name guys are taken care of, and then after the draft you start adding those street free agents.
Yeah, it basically works like that. Until we know the climate of who may be available in pro free agency, it's really too early to even talk about it. Like I said, I can't get specifics because of players being under contract, but we have an idea who are going to be UFAs.
I would think, too, that based on what you did with the safety position, for instance, which was such a glaring need last year, you might, if a fan wants to say, well, what are the Jaguars going to do? I use that as an example and take a look at a position that might be similar, where you need two guys on the field at the same time in that position or more. Wide receiver, of course, is one. If you could have the same kind of success at that position as you had in safety this past year, you'd probably be pretty happy about it.
Very much so. I mean, I think that's a position without question we can try to address in pro free agency and the draft. And then you're always looking for guys who can create rush. You're always looking for cover guys. I mean, there's things that you got to be able to do to win, on defense, get off the field on third down. And we'll always try to add players that can upgrade our football team.
Got a tweet here from Safa who says, I was the unsung player, meaning him, not me. He drove 5 hours for the game, sat through the whole game, then drove back 5 hours the same night. Safa, I don't know if you're the unsung player, but you get the shout out. That's there were a lot of Jags fans actually up there, and there you go. Round of applause. Laurel and hearty handshake. A lot of Jaguars fans made their way up to Atlanta for that ball game, and that's doing it hardcore right there.
That was impressive that he did that. Sounds like some of our scouts. I mean, that does happen, believe it or not, in scouting. But you try not to do that on a weekday, maybe on a weekend. But I would say this, Cole, there were a lot, and I had a chance to see a number of them, prior to the game. And it was very encouraging seeing the support we had this late in the year on the road in a trying season. And I truly appreciate the passionate support by the fans that we have here. We have a great core group of fans.
All right, here's how the playoff situation stands right now. New England and Houston have clinched their divisions. Pittsburgh and Baltimore have clinched playoff spots, but that division is still up for grabs in the AFC. In the NFC, Green Bay and San Francisco have clinched their divisions. New Orleans has clinched a playoff spot. So you've got, seven teams who have clinched spots in the postseason. And I think we know who the NFC teams are going to be more. Maybe there's that sixth position, maybe a little bit of question based on what happens in the NFC East. But we've got a pretty good idea, I think, on both sides who's probably going to be there. You see anybody making a move here at the end? Anybody you think is catching fire at the right time as the last 2 weeks approach?
To be honest with you, the last few weeks have been a whirlwind for me, so I couldn't give you an honest assessment.
All right, let's talk about the Titans. Jaguars play the Titans on Saturday in Nashville. What's the key matchup in that ballgame?
Well, if you look at their offensive line and their fullback and running back, you would say if you go to the Tampa Bay game on the 27th of November and the Buffalo game on the 4th of December, you would say, Chris Johnson is getting it going. Mm-hmm. But then the last 2 weeks, 23 yards against New Orleans and 55 against Indianapolis, you would say, well, they're back to where they were at the start of the year. I know this. He's an elite back. He's got home run speed. And I think it's their matchup up front with their offensive line and their backs against our D-line and linebackers. I think that's the key in this football game, my estimation.
There was a stretch there where people asked, what in the world is Chris, where did Chris Johnson go? We got the payday and this one, and then all of a sudden he busts out a couple of big, big games. And as you mentioned, I mean, we've seen him before. If he gets into the open field, watch, he's probably as fast as any running back in the NFL and can take it the distance. On the other hand, from a pure running back matchup from a fan standpoint, to watch what Maurice does and what Chris Johnson, two different styles of backs, but both guys who can certainly hit the home run and guys who make a big impact.
No question, and I feel very confident in Maurice and what he'll do with our group of players on offense. I know we have a goal for him, and he's got goals for himself, and we want to finish the season outright. He's done too much this year not to get the goal that he and we want for him.
Do we know who's going to be a quarterback for the Titans yet?
Not for certain. We could see Jake Locker. And, he's a lot more mobile. So
we'll see how that plays out. A lot less experience, but a good young man, another first-round pick. Gene, thanks a lot. We won't talk to you on this show until after Christmas. We'll have a Merry Christmas. We appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks, Cole. Thanks, Joe. And hopefully be Christmas come early on Saturday. Thank you very much to the fans.
For the general manager, Gene Smith, for producer Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. And good night from Jaguar Central.